You know, in the news this week, it's been all this news about whether, how should we say this, there should be fairness in the burden of defending the country, which is another way of saying, should the Haredim have to serve?
And Arabs.
Right.
You're really going to bring that up.
Ironically, most people other than Lieberman don't care about the Arabs. They're really more interested in the Haredim, because they're really two separate issues. One is, this is a Jewish country for the Jewish people. So what are you going to do with the Arabs? They should some kind of national service. It's an interesting question. But the question of, should all Jews serve? Like, should there be an entire class of Jews who don't serve?
Don't we have those parameters in the Torah, who's supposed to serve and who gets sent home?
Oh, we'll talk about that. Right. There is that parameter. But that parameter is, right, that the Moshe Rabbeinu stands them up and he says, he gives a whole list. Did you just build a house? Did you just
get married?
Did you just, what's the third one?
I don't remember. Plant a vineyard,
right. And then the last one is, what's the last one?
Are you scared?
Right. So, and I don't think this is necessarily the issue. It's not an issue of are you scared. You know, I really don't think that's the issue. The issue is more one of, well, the claim is, we are protecting the country through our Torah learning. Which is in and of itself interesting and it requires an analysis. Okay? But there are many other factors that go into the decision and it's really much more of a sociological question of, are we able to maintain our own distinct identity within the context of, if we send our youth out, we send all of our young people, our young men out into this environment, we have a very difficult time, we're afraid of what's going to happen to them. Not just religiously, but socially and culturally. This is a very interesting question. And we're going to touch on this today, because what we also don't realize is that when an entire class of people who are very important for the nature of Israel, they have great influence. If you think about it, what influence, Haredim have an influence on broader Israeli society. But then they remove themselves from the army. Not only to what degree, forget the fairness issue, the issue of fairness is important, but to what degree do they affect the army? To what degree do they affect the state by not being part of it, by not being part of the army, and I'm not talking about the military aspect. What?
Are you talking about like the military concept where they turn the
hands? No.
Also in the past 30 years, let's say 30 years ago, the Haredim were a smaller socio-demographic group, and they really still believe that, you know, the state was going to fall and that, you know, Hashem doesn't want the state. So I think that now they're very hard pressed to say that.
No, I don't think they believe that. Correct.
They themselves have gone through changes.
And, you know, and agreed.
And now they have to take on this. Like, they don't, most normative Haredi do not hang black flags outside of their,
right,
you know, things like that. And they come to terms with the fact that internet shells here in the Jerusalem will stay.
Right.
So now they have to, like, take the next step.
Okay, but my point is, like, if you saw, I don't know if you saw the pictures from the Hafganah in Kikar Shabbat this week of, like, you know, and they wanted this image, and it really is a striking image of these little Haredi boys, and on their shirts there's a thing that says, Tata, Hatzilu, save me from this terrible, you know, and I'm not entirely sure, what are they afraid of being, save me from what? Meaning, let's say, okay,
they're
save
afraid
me.
Of what they have. My personal thing
for
is
what? Why?
They'll say it's Gilead Arayot. That's what I chose.
Gilead Arayot?
Because there's all the men, all the women, that we come.
Hate to break to you. That's true.
Yes, but there are.
They're also units.
The sense of unit you go to.
Okay.
My suggestion was that for every person that's learning, they should meet face to face with a chayal and say to that chayal, when you're out there, I'm in here learning.
Well,
and you have.
That's your question. Who does it say in the Torah that that's true?
I'm saying if they're going to do that, put a face to it.
If
that's going to be their
all I'm saying is.
Because if their argument.
They're giving way too much.
If their argument is we're sitting and learning Torah to protect the nation, then there's two sides.
Wait, does this. One second. Does this.
Wait,
does this Torah, if we ever get to the third, does this Torah count as protecting the nation? Does our study count?
Sure.
Exactly.
I'm just saying put a face to it. I'm saying.
Exactly. So who says. Who says you have to be. Who says you have to be an adult male between the ages of 18 and 24 in order to protect the nation with your Torah learning?
You're talking from a sociological perspective. Right. As soon as you put a face on it, it's no longer an anonymous person. It's now a face, and it creates a different level of learning and a different attitude towards the learning.
I actually disagree with you.
Way too much.
Yeah. Like,
so the typical Haredi guy, the bottom line is, it's a lot easier to sit and learn than to actually get up and carry
it.
I actually disagree with you. I disagree with you. I disagree with you. I don't think a lot of them think that it's easier. I think a lot of them find themselves in this situation. They live in a certain culture.
Did you read the blog yesterday on the Times of Israel? This Dov Lipman guy?
I know Dov Lipman. I went to high school with him.
Oh, really?
He's a classmate of mine.
He wrote a really good blog about it.
Yeah?
Yeah, as a Haredi, and he wanted to meet with Netanyahu.
I'll check out what his latest
check
blog was.
Out, yeah.
Okay, Parak Lamed Aleph in Bamidbar. I bring this up obviously to hopefully actually have some Torah learning about. Parak Lamed Aleph, chapter 31 in Bamidbar. We're going to study the Chumash and then and we're going to touch on the Haredi thing. But I just brought it up because it's very interesting in context. Vayedaber Hashem in chapter 31. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Nikom nikmat bnei Yisrael meit hamidyanim, achar te'aseif el amecha. Avenge the vengeance of the Jewish people from the Midyanim. Achar, after which, te'aseif el amecha. You will gather to your nation, i.e., you will
die.
Okay? Well, so what does God say in a nutshell? He says, I've got one last job for you to do. I want you to avenge the Midyanites. What does Hashem want Moshe to do?
Wipe them out.
And then you will die.
Why does it say
te'asef? Te'asef el amecha. It's a nice way of saying te'asef el amecha by yasef el amav is a euphemism for he died. To gather to your people. Okay? But what's interesting, what's more interesting here is, like, what's the connection? Why does God make a condition of Moshe dying on attacking Midian? What?
Different. He's not afraid of dying because he knows he's
going to
die.
What's the connection? Meaning, what Hashem should have said?
And then afterwards.
Then. Yeah, I mean, Moshe already knows he's going to die. What's the God seems to tie those two together, the death of Moshe to the idea of Midian. Let's just review. What did Midian do? Because this is important to our. What did Midian do? What did the people of Midian do? Very good. They were the instigators of the incident with Pinchas. Remember with the Vayachal of Iznot El Benot Moab? Really it's Benot Moab, but it's considered Midian is the spearhead, right? Because Kazbi bat Nasi Midian, Kazbi was a Midianite. The Midianites were the people who were really responsible for, were they responsible for what happened to the Bnei Yisrael, to the Znut in Benot Moab. And as a result of this, 24,000 Jewish people died in a plague. Okay? So Hashem holds them responsible for this. Midian is considered incredibly dangerous, incredibly, that's my daughter. Incredibly, can't think of the word. I'll say dangerous again. I'll finish my coffee. Their values are in contradistinction to the Jewish values to such a degree that their very existence, their entire presence is considered a threat to the Jewish people. Okay? Let's look at
Moshe dying is not a good thing.
Is it?
Well, I'm saying that if these two things are connected.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're getting rid of all the perversion in the world and then it's.
Well, how would you feel if God says, yeah, I've got one more thing to you, and then you're going to die, so just take care of this for me, will you, please? That? Very good. Let's look at the next pasuk. Vayedaber Moshe el ha'am le'mor. Moshe spoke to the Am, saying, Heichatzu meitchem anashim la'tzava, v'yu ha'midyan la'tet nikmat Hashem v'midyan. So Moshe says, Vayedaber Moshe speak to the nation, saying, right, get military people, and they'll be in charge of Midyan. Let's look at Rashi for a second. Okay, Vayedaber Moshe. The next that Rashi on Gimel, Af al pi sheshama shemitato tuluya b'davar, even though he heard that his death would be dependent on this thing, meaning God says, do this last one thing and then you're dead. Nonetheless, what did Moshe do? Asa b'simcha v'lo icher. He did it with joy, with happiness, and with you know, and he did not delay at all. Okay, so that's Rashi presents. Rashi presents one picture of. of Moshe's response. Oh, Moshe, you're going to die. Just do this before this, then you're going to die. And, you know, da-da-da, no problem. I'm going to take care of it. The Midrash, you should know, presents a different picture entirely. Says the Midrash, Nusach Acher. Hitchil Moshe Rabbeinu Mefayes Lacha. This is the Midrash they don't tell you. Like, they tell you the Midrash, they tell you the Rashi about how Moshe was, like, so happy and did it, like, didn't delay at all. Okay? Nusach Acher. Different Nusach. Different version. This is the one that didn't make it into the Rashi. Okay? Because you could understand, what should Moshe's response be? What would anybody's response be saying, this is, I have one last job for you to do, and then you're gonna die. Or not, I'm gonna do it, right? It's like, okay, God. Right? What?
Well, I'm not
gonna do it. God tells you to do it, you're gonna do it. What are you gonna say?
Later.
You start to argue. You say, well, maybe, but there's more for me to do. You know, like our nature is, I'm not done yet. I haven't finished yet. I have a lot to do. I have a whole response. I have a whole job to do. Okay? Okay. It says in Midrash, Hitchil Moshe Rabbeinu Lefayes LaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Mitato. He tries to, like, be Mefayes, to appease God and say, you know, maybe you can let it go for a little while. Maybe I can do something else. Amar Lefanav Ribono Shel Olam Libo Imita. How could I die? Shera'iti Derechecha Ma'asecha. I know you. And it says, Lo Amud Ki Echia Va'asaper Ma'aseya. I will not die. I will live. Why should I die, God? I've got a lot to do. Okay. So God argues back with him, right? God says, no, everybody's got to die. Everyone's got their time. Okay? Va'adayin lo nitpayetz Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was not appeased. Moshe, like, it's interesting. Most of us don't really have the ability to argue. But Moshe says, no, I'm not ready to die. I'm sorry. I'm not going to go. You know, why? Because you're going to send a malach ha-mavid. Either God's going to kill you himself.
Like that song, the journey song of little Neshamala. But
come with me.
Right, where the malach says, come with me. And then Neshamala's like, but there's so much more work here to do.
Yes, right. So, but I guess Moshe could argue. We're going to send the malach ha-mavid to beat Moshe. Moshe's going to say, hey, get out of here. Like, you know, come on, really? You got to be kidding. Okay, so Hashem says two things. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, im ata rotze shetich yashanim harbe o elef shanim. You want to live 1,000 years? No problem. Lo yiru Yisrael b'mapelet zonehem v'lo tikanesh midyan b'fehem. That's fine. No problem. You can live as long as you want. They'll never beat their enemies, and they're not going to destroy midyan. Meaning, I make conditional upon your death. Understand? Condition on your death is the beating of midyan. So that's the question. Which do you care about more? The success of the Jewish people or your own life? Which is going to be better?
That's harsh.
Yeah. So, miyad nipayes Moshe.
Well, we got a lot about the enemy.
No, I'm saying, but this is an important enemy. This is, you know what I'm saying? He says, b'yayasev. So what's interesting is, according to the Midrash, this was an ongoing discussion. Like Hashem says, it's time for you to die. And Moshe said, I don't want to die. And Hashem says, but you've lived a good life. You've done incredible things. Moshe, but I've got more to do. So Hashem says, listen, that's fine. You can live as long as you like. But he says, but nikom eita minyanim ve'acharte yasef alamecha. Your death is connected to their success. Do you want the Jews to succeed, or do you want to live? And then Moshe says, oh, I didn't say that. I want the Jewish people
so
to succeed.
Did we want that?
What?
Did we want more?
We did. We're going to get there. But what's interesting is, Mimi, they don't tell you. That's the Rashi. Rashi doesn't share you that midrash with you, right? Moshe, no problem. Besimcha, you know what I'm saying? Which is another version, of course. I don't think it's a criticism of Moshe to say he wanted to live.
Oh, why didn't Rashi?
I think. I don't know. Do you think it's the only reason?
I think it's his.
It doesn't fit our vision. It doesn't fit our vision of Moshe also.
It's his prime motivating.
No, because
correct.
Moshe doesn't want to die because he wants to do more. But then he wants to die in order, he doesn't want to die in order to, you know,
it's not about want
to retire in Florida.
Right. I agree with you. I think that also, I think that Rashi is shot, but he also does have an agenda of trying to portray Moshe in a certain way. Okay. You know what I'm saying? So that's definitely a part of it as well. Okay. But that's a different side of Moshe that we didn't see until now. Okay. Let's go on. So let's ask another question. One second. Okay, next one. Pasuk Gimel. Vayidaber Moshe el ha'am le'mor. Moshe spoke to the people saying, Hechaltzu me'itchem anashim la'tzava, v'yu al midyan, la'teg nikmat Hashem be'midyan. Hechaltzu chalutzim. I'm looking for chalutzim. Chalutzim are pioneers. What are pioneers? What does it mean? What is a chalutz really?
Right,
a volunteer. Okay? A pioneer is someone who pioneers something. Who's an original person. Okay? From you, people for the tzava, for the military, the you al Midyan, and they should be in charge of Midyan, latet nikmat Hashem b'Midyan. Mimi, I need your tech skills here. Okay? Compare, I'm in Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Bet, and Pasuk Gimel. Perek Lamed Aleph. I want you to compare Pasuk Bet. Go around. Go this way. Ima's going to come help you in a second. Okay? Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Bet, and Pasuk Gimel. There's a huge problem with Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel. So I'll look at it carefully and tell me what's the problem with Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel. There's a contradiction there. New surroundings, it's very distracting. Yes.
In Bet it says Nikom Nikmat Bnei Yisrael.
Good.
And in Gimel it says, Nikmat.
Exactly. Everybody see it?
It's considered one of those.
One of those what?
Inconsistencies.
No, it can't be. Inconsistency usually would be if you have a version in Bamidbar and a version in Devarim, mm-hmm. So somebody says, well, the author changed it. But you would never have it that the author changed it between one pasuk and the next. It's in the same context and the same story. Plus, there's two different speakers. Hashem says, Nikom Nikmat Bnei Yisrael Me'etam Midyanim. Right? So, and Moshe says, Nikom Nikmat Hashem Bamidyan. So why does Moshe change the language? Moshe should say, I'm looking for volunteers to avenge the people of Israel for the thing that the Midyan did for us. Okay, so there's a simple answer to this. Why would Moshe change?
Well, it's still God in the command, but it's being done for Bnei Israel.
Okay, right, I mean, the simplest explanation is Hashem's worried about the honor of Bnei Israel, or the well-being of Bnei Israel. Nikom Nikmat Bnei Israel, meaning the Midyanim are an existential threat to you. So therefore, you're in danger. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu says, what are we here for? Right, what's the real purpose? It's right. It's Chil Hashem that was involved here. So it's Nikmat Hashem. The Midrash adds another element that's connected to the Achar Te'aseif Alamecha. So Moshe says, you know, I got one more thing to do. God told me it's time for me to die, but we have this one last thing to do. So the Midrash says, I don't know if it appears in Rashi. I think it definitely appears in the Midrash. So the Midrash says, well, what do the Jewish people say? They said, Moshe, we're not going to do it.
But they know if they did it, Moshe would die.
Yes, Moshe said, I'm going to die. So they said,
We're not doing it.
Right, so then Moshe had to say, no, it's not for me, it's not for you. They said, it's for us. Well, I think the Kli Yakar says, well, for us, we're not going to do it.
How did they show that Moshe's
going to die? No. So the Kli Yakar says that he told them that I have one last thing to do, and then God tells me I'm going to die. So the Bnei Yisrael said, really? Well, if it's Nikmad Bnei Yisrael, if it's for our benefit, we're Mochel. We'd rather you stick around. So that's why Moshe had to say, no, it's Nikmat Hashem. It's for Hashem, it's not for me. And therefore, that's why he switched it. It's just a very interesting commentary. Okay? So what is the Moshe says, Yichelu meitchem anashim letzava, Pasuk Dalit. Elef la mateh, l'chol matot Yisrael tishbechu letzava. 1,000 per tribe, for all the tribes of Israel you shall send to the army. Okay?
Why is it repeated here?
What?
Why?
Good, it's machloket. In the Midrash, one says, one doesn't explain why it says twice, Elef Lamates, why does it repeat itself? According to some, what's that, emphasis?
It's like saying one by one. Like, it was the way that they said 1,000 per.
Correct. Okay, but it is, the Pashtanim will tell you that's the derech, or the way of the text. The Darshanim will tell you, no, it's not 1,000 per tribe, it was 2,000 per tribe. So it's machloket whether they send 12,000 to fight or 24,000 to fight. Okay?
Yeah, it says very
clearly, Hold on. Yes, it does, that's true. One second. Elef Lamateh. I remember seeing it was 24. I don't know. I'll look it up somewhere else. You're absolutely correct. I'll look it up a little later. Second. I'm sure I'll find it. See if you can find it in one of the Mefarshim. Let's go on a second.
It does say further in the text, 12,000 armed for war.
12,000?
Armed for war.
Right, 12,000, what she said. So why should I say, so I said 24, but maybe I'm wrong. Vayimasu me'alfei Yisrael, elef lamatesh ne'masav, elef chalutzei tzava. Okay, so they gave 24,000. There's a problem. Vayishlach otam Moshe, elef lamatel le'tzava. So Moshe sent down. Now it's emphasizing again, 12,000. Then it's 1,000 per, look at the psukim in a row. Pasuk Dalid, 1,000 per tribe. Pasuk He, 12,000. Pasuk Vav?
In the Sifri, it says,
yes. I knew I found it somewhere. Okay. Okay. Right. So meaning, very good. So it's a machloki whether it was 12 or 24. But we have this emphasis on this number. There's a problem with this number. It's a very interesting problem with this number. What's the problem with the number? There's a big problem with the number. No, that's okay. Okay? What's the problem with the number? What? That's right. They're going out to fight Midian. You got to fight Midian. How many people do you think Midian sent? 1,000 people tribe is nothing. How many people does Midian have? Take a wild guess. 50,000? 100,000? Hundreds of thousands? But numbers matter. Only today do numbers matter less. What?
It's like sending to Iran 1,000 soldiers.
Right. Exactly. Correct, but what's interesting is that these wars were fought b'derech hateva. It was nes b'derech hateva. Like we wanted them to enjoy them. There was a miraculous nature, but they had to do it in the normal way. So this is a specifically abnormal way. Moreover, it's abnormal, and the Torah is emphasizing its abnormality. Like what I'm trying to focus on is three psukim in a row. The Torah is telling us there's a very small amount. So why in the world are we sending just 1,000 per tribe specifically? What about the rest of the wars? And they always have God behind them? What's unique about, meaning specifically this war with Midian, that they have there? Okay.
I mean, every war, let's say, is a success. But this one has the purpose of truly God's war, but it's
Moshe is in charge of it.
One second, did you say excluding Shevet Levi?
Yeah.
Look at Rashi on Dalid. The whole matod Israel.
The rabot. Sorry, it says in parentheses lahavi and in brackets lo tishen. She shows the lady.
Really?
I guess in the Sefrida was they're not sure whether it was a lahavi or lahavi.
So in our Rashi, there's toys in there, Arlen. Oh, you'll find them maybe. Okay, in our what's that? Okay, in our Rashi, Rashi says including Levi. That's unusual. That's extremely unusual. That Levi should go out to war? Levi never went out to war. Right? And here Levi is going out to war.
I just wonder if, okay, usually when we're told to go out to war, it's to, like, conquer land. Okay? And this is the first time that it's a proactive war. Proactive
this
war.
Is not conquering? This is all, I mean, we beat.
No, because the other ones, they came out to war to us. Right?
Amalek did. This isn't part of Kibush Haaretz, right? But as soon as we came to the land, we were going to destroy
but
everyone.
But that's very clearly that there's an inyan of
Nekama. Very good. Right? Which tells
so
you what?
It shows you that we are allowed to do wars of Nekama. That it's different. That it's something that we're allowed to do.
Well, who said you couldn't?
Well, there are some people. Some people always say that, like, even if you're in the army, you should only do wars that they have.
Let's put down the Israeli army today, the ethics of the Israeli army today, and the ethics of the Israeli army way back when.
Yeah.
I'll give you a small example that we're going to struggle. I was going to end with this, but it's a struggle. When they come back with the spoils of war, i.e. they killed every man, but they came back with women and children. That's okay. You can skip for a second. Vayishbu b'nei Yisrael et nishen midyan ve'et tapam ve'et kol behemtam. Okay, they Yishbu Shevi. They captured all the women and all the children. Okay, one second. I'm skipping to Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayiktsof Moshe al Pikutei Hachayel Sarei Alafim Sarei Hameot Tabei Mitzvah Melchama. Moshe gathered all the officers together and he started screaming at them. He was angry at them. He came down on them. Vayomer lehem Moshe, chitem kol nekeva. What are you doing? You left the women alive. They were involved in the Dvar Bilam. They were the ones. I'm skipping a little. Yudzayin. Vatahirgu kol zachar bataf. V'chol isha yodat itin mishkav zachar harogu. Kill all the women who are of marriageable age, and also kill all the male children. All the little girls you can leave. And what do they do? They do exactly that. Yes, they do. Right. This is not our. This is we would have a lot of trouble with this today.
Which nation is it that
what?
We're supposed to kill it?
Amalek. That's Amalek. Right. Correct. But this is not like, you know, a Derabanan or a Midrash somewhere. This is black and white in the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. You know what I'm saying? All the women and all the boys. Children. Any age. Every age.
When you say that they left them alive.
Today we would call this. Today we would call this.
The women to have
yeah, so we would.
They
right.
Took the women for themselves. Is that what you're saying? When you took them as spoils?
Slaves.
As slaves?
Yes, absolutely. We keep them as slaves. Or, you know,
extra
I don't know.
Wives.
Extra wives, correct.
No, because aren't you not like
maidservants, shikhos.
Wow.
It was more responsibility. But you, I'm saying, Mimi, I wasn't going to get to this. I wasn't going to get to this now. But you bring up the, Amoni, right? You bring up the values of the IDF today. The values of the IDF are Western values, right? They are values of life and, of course.
We live in a Western world.
We do.
No, but I was also just thinking, like Moshe, if this is his last battle, I think that he would, the way that he would organize the battle and things like that is to set a precedent for battles to come.
Okay.
So what he does is he takes the same, obviously, like, you know, God is still on their side. So really God could just, like, you know.
What, do you need battles at all?
Right. But there's still Derech HaTeva. So he takes 1,000 from each Shevet.
That's Derech HaTeva? It's enough.
It's enough to show a bit of Yishtavut.
Okay.
He can't just get back with his feet out.
Okay.
Watch war games. And
like we do today, drones. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
and then he, you know, like he prepares them and he's, I think he's sending him chayot for how you're going to fight battles when I'm not here.
Okay. But that's not how they fought battles as soon as they entered Canaan, they didn't do 1,000 per tribe.
Everyone.
Oh yeah, everyone. Everyone. Right, even though, what do we know about, what's interesting about Yehoshua? What did Yehoshua, the Torah says that Yehoshua was unique in that he fought during the day, the Gemara says, and he learned at night.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yeah.
That was, I mean. Anyway, right, exactly.
If Levi fought in this one and he didn't fight normally,
Levi did not fight normally.
Everyone, when it comes to defending Hashem's name and Hashem's honor, everyone is obligated.
Everyone goes out. So let's just point out again. One?
There's no Talmud.
We start with the Tala. We're going to get back to the Tala. We will. No, we will. There's a point I'm saying. This is, what's unusual about this is Levi, according to some in the Midrash, 1,000 per tribe emphasized, this is not your normal battle. Okay, why is this not your normal battle? Because this is not your normal enemy. What's the purpose of this battle? It's linikom nikmat Hashem. It's a spiritual fight that translates itself into the physical world. Why? Because they fought, what? What'd she say?
The physical element is the same thing like
one second, how do they fight spiritually? How do they fight us?
They did it physically. They sent the women in to
fought not fair. That's the point. I hate to break it to you. You take any yeshiva in the world, if you put Mir and you put
next to a
free porn across the way, who's gonna win? Just put a movie house, you know what I'm saying? Free movies, anybody wants to come in? Just put across the street in Meisharim. Not for nothing do they say we maintain a level of spirit of religiosity in our neighborhoods.
But in general, in the Torah, there's no such thing as pure spirituality without physicality. I mean, look at Sarat.
Mm-hmm.
Sarat is a spiritual affliction that's manifested in a physical way because we, bottom line, we're not malachim. We live in a physical world. So everything that's spiritual has to have some kind of physical.
It does have manifestation in a physical way. That's correct.
It has to.
Correct.
So
you have to fight the fight. You have to fight the battle. So I'm going to look at Ramban for a second. Ramban notices all of these and he says the following. Look at Ramban if you have it on Pasuk Dalet. Says the Ramban. Okay. Ramban says, Lo shalach sham kol am hatzava. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu did not send the entire Tzava, the entire army. Even though the Midyanim were great, were very many people, the Harim Bitsurot Kudolot Ma'od. See where I am, Ramban on Pasuk Vav. Okay, and the cities were fortified. So logically it would make sense to send this big army. Vahatam, and the reason is, you have it or you don't have it? Ramban on Pasuk, you see it or on Pasuk Vav? Yeah, you're in the right place, see if you can find it. Vahatam. One second. On Lamed Aleph. Yeah, here we are. Are you Rabbi Meinam? Yeah, it's somewhere here. I lost my Maod. Here we are. Yeah, Vahatam. Vahatam ki nichshalim bibenot Moab hayu rabim. Many people succumb to Benot Moab. Ve'einam re'uyim l'nikmat Hashem. And they were not worthy of nikmat Hashem. Al kain bachru anashim tzadikim biyeduim l'shiftehem. Who went out to fight the Nikonom Nikmat? Anybody want to guess who went out to fight? Rashi says, we'll see Rashi in a second, that they took Anashim Tzadikim. Who did they take to go out and fight Nikmat Midian?
Always, they always took Anashim Tzadikim, because in the front, in the beginning of the war, it comes out, the coin that all comes out, and says, anybody who's afraid he's going to die because he did a faith should go home.
They took the most righteous people. Correct. They took the most spiritual people. What? That's my point. That was what I started with. That's exactly my point. Rashi says that they specifically wanted the most religious, the most spiritual, the most righteous people, and those were the ones who had to go out and fight. Because the danger in this battle wasn't just a physical danger. The danger in the battle was even more so a spiritual danger. They already beat us once. How'd they beat us? They didn't beat us on the battlefield. They beat us the night before the battlefield.
And that's why maybe he wanted them to kill all the women, because
that's exactly why he wanted to kill all the women. Vihine, you'll see the other one. But Moshe litzivah otam maya asu. He didn't tell them what to do. Rav amar lehem datet nikmat Hashem b'midyan. Okay? V'chashav, Moshe thought, shelo yashiru behem sariru palit ki nikmat Amalek. Moshe thought that they wouldn't leave people over. V'kasher ra'ah sheishiru hanashim v'hatap ad behima. When Moshe saw that they left over the women and the children, katsaf al hanashim, hayidot mishkav zachar. That's why he got angry. Okay? Because that's the whole point of the battle. The whole point of this fight was a spiritual fight, not a religious fight. So this is what's so interesting. Like that, the point I wanted to make was that the people that Moshe sent, let me give it, Rashi says it specifically, look at Pasuk Gimel. Okay? I read the first Rashi. Even though he knew he was going to die, he did it with joy. Anashim, who are anashim? Tzadikim. In this context, the word anashim means, Moshe says, get tzadikim, get the most righteous. Right? I want the tzadikim to be the ones to fight. Because they are the ones that are going to uphold the morality of the army. So Mimi, you said it before, like one of the ta'anot of the people of the Haredim, they don't want to go to the army, is because it's pretus. It's inappropriate. It's not right. Whose fault is that? They're 100% right. You know why? Because there's no balancing values in the army. There's no one to come along and say, this is not acceptable. This is not okay. So if you take an entirely secular culture, and you say to them, you know, do what you want, then of course it's going to be a terrible environment. Of course it's going to have their values. How can you say, well, I'm not going to go there because it's not my values? Well, why would you think it would be your value? You're not there.
But what's one good to do with that?
Yeah. What?
What's one good to do with that?
We don't want a Haredi army. We want a Jewish army. You know what I want? You know what I want the Jewish
army? So be Haredi.
You know what I want the Jewish army to be? I want it to be separate. I want the machaneh to be tahor. I want all the soldiers, you know, in the Nachal Haredi. They all learned after they have time to learn every day. They do, and there's no reason why they shouldn't have time to learn every day. They train for 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever it is, and they learn Daf Yomi. But I don't want just the Haredim to do it. I want everybody to learn Daf Yomi.
But the staff would be the Haredim.
Exactly. One of the, if you ever learn through Ema Banim Semecha. Well, hold on one second. Let me. Yeah.
It's not the Weltanschauung. The Weltanschauung is that we. It's the Chazon Ish. It's that there are two ways that you deal with the society around you. Either you build up a wall and completely separate yourself from them, or you try to incorporate your values and you armor yourself personally, but you go out into the world. The second way is not that way. The way is the first way. That, like, you know, that Hadash Asher Me'Torah, that anything that's not what I know, what I am not going to involve myself in. So it's not fair for you to expect somebody to completely go against their entire worldview. Easily, like you're spouting these, it's just now starting that they're going to the workplace, and it's
in America they go to work.
Because
they go
in America, but we're talking in Israel. You can't. It's a completely different society. You can't. Like we're. It's very nice that we're getting here and talking on our high horse and everything.
That's what we're here for.
Of
course, I'm on my high horse. That's my. It's my horse.
It's my son. It's my kids. I can be on my high horse.
I think the army has to make fundamental changes or show some willingness.
The army did make fundamental changes. Something called Nachal Haredi. They said, we'll give you your own.
Yeah.
Hold on, we'll get there. Hold on a second. If you ever read through Eimon Ben Smicha, one of the things that he says about the whole point, the whole book is interesting. It's not about our community trying to build up Eretz Yisrael. The guy who wrote, his name is Rav Teichta. Anybody ever learn any of Eimon Ben Smicha? He did. No, your husband did, right? Rav Teichta was a Munkacher Chassid. And his whole point was obviously there was a Zionist movement, but the Zionist movement was people like us. He wanted the Haredim to go and move to Eretz Yisrael. And he says over and over again, he says, the reason they want the Haredim to go to build up Eretz Yisrael is because if we build it, it will be in our image. It will be our Eretz Yisrael. It'll be the way we want it to be. How can you come and complain that the Eretz Yisrael is all secular and all treif and all tameh, and it's built by the secular people when you don't do anything about it? But imagine, and he says it, it's prophetic, and it's absolutely true. Imagine if in 1930, or when he was right, 1944, 1942, 1938, whenever he decided, whenever he changed his mind. Imagine if 100,000... During the war. It was a process, it seems like. Imagine if in 1940, 100,000 Haredim Sama made their way to Eretz Israel. 100,000. What would Israel be like today? What would the state of Israel be like today? I mean, Netanyahu would have a long beard. You know what I'm saying? It's impossible to know. So you'll say to yourself, well, that's conjecture. Yeah, it is conjecture, but who's responsible for that? Who's responsible for the fact that it's not like that? You know what I'm saying? What? Yeah, absolutely. You know, because, you know, like Rina said, their whole idea of Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, their ghetto mentality, the idea of a ghetto mentality makes sense when you're living in the ghetto. When the world around you is attacking everything that you hold dear, and you have no responsibility to the world around you. All your responsibility is to survive and to make sure that you pass down your values to the next generation.
But that's what they feel like.
Isn't there a greater responsibility here to build up Klal Yisrael? Where's the obligation to build up Klal Yisrael? Where's your responsibility vis-a-vis the rest of the Jewish people? You're not talking about Goyim. They're not Goyim, they're Jews. Make them all Haredi. Make me Haredi. Fine, convince me.
That's the
what? No, they're only building up themselves.
They're having kids.
What? Okay. All I'm saying is that this idea of that the army would be different if more people were in the army, okay, and the idea of and it's very clear that in this context, right, because of the sexuality and the danger and the arayot that were inherent in the military, especially in this mission, Hashem said, no, send the secular. Send the charechis, send the chiloni. Because they do it anyway. No, that's not exactly right. Send the tzaddikim. Send the most righteous people. Send the kol younger life who learn all day. They're the ones who have to go fight this time. That's exactly what it says. I'm not making it up. This is what Rashi says. This is what the Midrashim say. This is what the Ramban says. Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay.
If you're going to be taking the aspect of learning all day, you have to do it if you're training in the heart. Like, taking breaks and
Yeah, it's easy for us to say. And that argument is like, go talk to my friend Rabbi Lippman. It's a straw man. It's a straw man. Those arguments are really, in, like he says, they're really to mask the idea that culturally they're afraid of the integration. And they don't want to integrate.
That, you know, when you say about things that another person can get out of going to the army for, according to the Torah, that he's afraid, I was thinking that maybe that's like the Torah's way of saying if he's psychologically not able. Like, there's no way of saying, I would think that's the Torah's way of, like...
Well, let me ask you. You think anybody who's ever been to war is afraid? And anybody who says they're not afraid, anybody who's not afraid is lying. Is telling you, is lying to you. And the idea, and the Torah says later, the idea the Kohanim would go and they would strengthen them and they would give them chizuk and say, you're fighting... Like, if you look at the Rambam, in Hilchot Melachim, the Rambam talks about the way they would talk to them and encourage them, you're fighting Hashem's war, and you know what I'm saying?
And there are many Rabbanim from the Hesed Yeshivot go and do it.
They do that, correct.
Whenever you read stories about people during wars, they're always saying that their Rambam came and that their Rabbanim came and helped them, and really helped them.
Both
spiritually and psychologically.
Just so you should know, this is actually an issue of controversy in the IDF. When they had Oferet Yitzchak, the last thing, right, the last Rav HaRashi HaTzva'i, Rav Ratz or whatever they call him, right, his name was Rav Ronsky. Okay? And he saw, classically, until his era, he saw the Rabbanut was simply had a job of sure giving shiurim, but it was much more making sure the food was kosher, taking care of certain religious tasks that needed to be done. Right. And he saw himself in a very different way, and he said, no, the Rav Tzva'i has to be like a spiritual guide for the soldiers in the army. Many soldiers really like this. And he said things like it said in the Rambam. Many secular soldiers, some say many, a number of secular soldiers were very much bothered by it, because they saw it as religious indoctrination, and they actually used the term jihad, holy war. You know what I'm saying? This is not who we are. You know what I'm saying? It's this. There's a very fine line between, on the one hand, using this terminology and then saying you're fighting Hashem's war. You know what I'm saying? It makes them uncomfortable in a way. If you're a secular soldier and you don't have these values, it could make you very much uncomfortable to hear these words of indoctrination, as it were, to go out and rile you up in order to go fight.
But the thing, there's no atheist in a.
There's a very fine line. You should just know, Rav Ronsky was forced out. And the Rav Tzva'i of today is very much less so of a personality.
You don't know how he would be in an operation.
Right. This is one of the things that they talk about. But if the Haredim were in the army and this was expected of them, if all the soldiers expected them, what?
They'd be doing it within their own battalion.
Correct. You understand what I'm saying? There's so many aspects to, in Israel, one of the core issue that all of us deal with all the time is, to what degree is the Jewish state inherently Jewish, and to what degree is the Jewish state of the Jews? So these issues come up in the army as well. They're huge issues. When we fight, do we fight because it's a Mechamed Mitzvah, or do we fight because we're defending the Jewish state? You know what I'm saying? And these are all subtle issues. These are very, very subtle.
But you know what?
I'm going
to
blog about this, because one of the things I wrote a piece recently about, you know, about Aliyah and all that, and one of the people commented and said, if I make Aliyah, one of the things that keeps me back from making Aliyah is that my kids, I don't have to have my kids drafted to the army. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I really take issue with that. I'm anxious about them going to the army, and of course it's dangerous, but I see it as a mitzvah, as a privilege, as a, yeah. Yeah.
So when we first made Aliyah, we had some relatives over, and the kids were talking, and the relatives are of the Haredi persuasion, and the kids were talking to each other, and the relative said to one of our boys, said, you have to go to the army, and how terrible that is, and our son said, what do you mean have to? I get to go to the army, and of course I'm scared and I don't want to go, but in a certain way that this is my privilege that I get to go to the army.
One of my friends whose father is around in the Gush, he said to me that the most amazing he ever had was when he was in the army. He said that it was so nice to see so many different cultures, you know, and they did sit down and they did have a lelah seder. And he said that when he was Shabbat in the army with other, he wasn't in a unit, you know, the Hesed unit, there were a bunch of banishing together, but they weren't only.
He said it was such an opportunity to have a positive hashpa. Nachon, there are people who don't want to come. He said, but when you have a whole group of guys sitting together, singing Friday night, even though they're tired, even though it's like, you know, whatever, and then some of the chilani guys come and see that it's not as something threatening, but it's something that's spiritual and special, he said that there, that in and of itself, you've done something.
Okay. But that's different than the idea of seeing the notion of fighting to defend the Jewish people as a mitzvah, as a religious value in and of itself. And
so
something
it has
that
to be.
It's not something
how
that
it not be?
You know what
how
I'm saying?
It not be?
It's just interesting because when we grew up in America, well, I don't know where you guys are from, when we grew up in America, the idea of serving in the armed forces, like it was just so what?
You didn't grow up in America, but just
you didn't grow up in America?
Well, so that's
oh, you're Canadian. But it was like nobody religious would even, it's considered like nobody religious would date, would like dream, unless you went into the chaplaincy maybe. There was always like a chaplain.
20 years ago, my two grandfathers were religious.
Sure, all of them, all enlisted.
A whole article was written in a Mudia magazine.
World War II is different. World War II was very different. The whole attitude was different. My maternal, second. What? I was named after someone who was injured, who served, and he's like a captain in the Navy, and he was in military intelligence, and,
so my grandfather,
you know,
she lived with me well.
America.
Germany.
Correct.
You know? and for them,
yeah, but when you grew up, for a Jewish boy to go and say, I'm joining the American Army? For a Jewish boy to say, I'm going to join the American Army?
But they went because
what? Your brother did? Was he religious at the time? Oh, there you go. I'm saying that is, like, in America, one second, in America, it's considered an act of someone who goes, a normal American, who goes and serves in the military, an act of patriotism, an act of to be, so in Israel, it should also be considered an act of patriotism and valor and something to be proud of. Except, what happens is American, from religious Jews, are translating that value of, oh, you're gonna lose your whole religiosity, that feeling that you have of joining the army, and you're translating it into the same thing in Israel. And it's not true. It's absolutely opposite. You have to be exposed. You have to be aware. You have to meet people who see it as a source of pride. You know what I'm saying? There was an article, it should be translated, it has to be translated. There was an article in the Motzash magazine of Makor Rishon. You guys get Makor Rishon?
Yeah.
Okay. There's an article about the latest graduates from officer training school in Israel. The latest graduates of the 75 graduates or something like that, 26 were religious. It's unbelievable. 15 went to the Mechinah of Dam Tzva'i in Eili. So they said there's something in the water in Eili that gets these guys to become officer training.
His
yeah.
Son was the mayor.
Of Eili.
He started
the Hester. So it's there's a Mechinah there. You have to meet these people. You know what I'm saying? In order to change a culture. But there is no contradiction between being an Ish Tzadik and being an Ish Tzva'i. They go together. They're one and the same. And that's something that like it bothers me inherently when I see this idea of being in the army as being something you have to do, or being something that Nebuch you could do. And I'm very proud that my children are now in a situation, in an educational atmosphere, in an environment where it's being taught that A, it's expected, it's understood that it's something you're going to do, and B, it's something that's positive to do. And I'll add another element as well. I have a nefew in the army now. He's in the Tzanchanim. He's grown up a tremendous amount in the past 9 months. Let's take away all the religious issues that are important that shouldn't be ignored, and all the mechamed mitzvah. Young men need to grow up, and a lot of you don't do a lot of growing up in yeshiva. Yeshiva is actually a place where you grow religiously, but you don't necessarily mature. You don't learn to be challenged beyond your own capabilities. You don't learn to do things that you didn't think you could do.
You don't
learn responsibility. That's
you
right.
Have no responsibility.
You have no responsibility whatsoever. There's a lot to be said for serving the army. There's a lot to be said for it, for growing up and maturity. And what?
You're preaching to the converted.
Yeah, I know, but there's a lot to be said. There's the tangible benefits to serving the military that are even beyond the spiritual and the religious, and we shouldn't ignore them. Nonetheless, let's go back to the Chumash. I'll get off my soapbox. I'm not going to get off my soapbox. Ramban is my soapbox. Rashi is my soapbox. The people that serve are Anashim Tzadikim. They are the most spiritual. You want to say they're not the Kolel Yungalite? If we, you know, we want to search the Mutzadikim, we need more religious people in the army in order to their zechut is what protects us. But it doesn't protect us only when they're learning. It protects us when they're fighting as well. And somehow, to create this idea, somehow, we've bought into this, into this, into this idea, this myth, that there's a division of power. That there's the fighters and then there's the spiritual. When in reality, the fighters are supposed to be the spiritual. And the spiritual are supposed to be the fighters. And maybe there are supposed to be Yichidei Segula, but only Yichidei Segula. And one is not different than the other.
I think it's like when you think about this image of the boy's dad next to the tank, they tell us to move the film. One of those most powerful images, whether you're religious or not, that you see, affects everybody.
Let's finish. We're not going to finish. I'll give you a couple more psukim because there's a couple of midrashim that you got to see. Vayishlach otam, pasuk vav. Vayishlach otam Moshe elef lamateh letzava. 1,000 again. Otam ve'et Pinchas ben Elazar hakohen letzava. Ukle hakodesh v'chatzotrot tatrua biyado. Pasuk vav, verse 6. Right, he sent, Moshe sent 1,000 per tribe. Okay. Pinchas. Remember, Pinchas is one of the kohanim, big kohen. So they had, again, what I would call the Rav HaRashi, right? Pinchas is wearing the bein of the clay kodesh. So when you go to war, it's interesting. There is no separation between, you take this situation, you take this image that the people are used to seeing in the Mishkan. The Kohen is not allowed to wear his kelim out of Mishkan. And he goes to war and he's wearing these kelim. It's a very, very interesting imagery that you would think, oh, what's that guy doing here? But no, he's there for a reason. And they have the chatzotot tshuva, and they blew the chatzotot that they normally blew where? In the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? But let's look at Rashi for a second. Okay? Rashi says, Otam ve'et Pinchas, magid shaya Pinchas shakul kineged kulam. Pinchas was equal of them all. Mimnei ma halach Pinchas v'lo halach Elazar. Why did Pinchas go not Elazar? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mi shitchil b'mitzvah, the guy who started the mitzvah, Shaharag Kazbi Batsur, Yigmor, he should finish. Okay? So there are a lot of reasons why Pinchas specifically. What's the reason? Because Pinchas is the representative of the vengeance of Midian. He began the whole thing about of avenging Midian. He should finish. Look at Uklei HaKodesh, the next Rashi. Zeh Aaron v'Hatzitz. Pinchas wore the tzitz of Kodesh Mahashem. And they took the Aaron. Remember, there was an Aaron that went out to battle.
Always.
There was an Aaron Meshuach Milchama. They always took a special Aaron. Like, what are we taking an Aaron to battle for? Because the soldiers were the ones, they were fighting in the name of God. Read on. You gotta know this Rashi.
I mean,
I'm listening. Zeh Aaron Vatzit, Shayah Bilam, the planes, he'll take in a second. The planes. Shayah Bilam in my hand. Umafriach Malchei Midyan Bakshafim. So Bilam used his black magic to get the Malchei Midyan to fly them around. They're all flying around. Back to Harry Potter, right? Okay. So of course, Pinchas used the tzitz, the name of God, to start flying around. I'm sorry, Bilam is also flying with him. So Pinchas took out the tzitz with the name of God, Yud Hei Vav Hei. V'hem Noflim. Boom, they all fall down. Lekach ne'emar al chal lehem b'malchei Midyan. It says al chalem the kings of Midyan on their chalal, on their bodies, on their corpses. Shenoflim al chalali min ha'avir, because he shot them down from the sky. V'chein b'Bilam katuv, and it says the same thing about Bilam. So you have to see the midrashim. The midrashim about Bilam, the battle of Bilam and Pinchas. I got a second. I got to share with you the midrash or two. How did he get him down? What? Bilam was a Midianite. Bilam went to Midian. Remember, Bilam was hired by Moab. But Bilam was really a Midiani. One second. Here we are. Midrash. Crazy Midrashim.
Where's Yitro in all of this? Isn't he Kohen Midian? He doesn't show up in the story at all. You would think, like in our story, the religious people are the ones who are figuring
out. So. Yitro went home.
Yitro went home? He was hired?
I guess so. Hey, man, Shema'a Bilam HaRashi Pinchas. So Bilam saw Pinchas, Asad Shezro Otar, Kishne Luchot Vanim. He took his two arms and he made them like two stones, two Luchot Vanim. Vaya Poreach Vole Lamala. He took off. I don't know how. Okay.
Rocket
Man. Right, Rocket Man. Iron Man. Ibnei Shu Mishtamesh Vashem HaMukharash. Because he used the name of God. Ah, Pinchas, Kevan Shiro Poreach Vole. So Pinchas said, cool trick. Ah, who Oseh Shezro Otar Shne Luchot Vanim? Vaya Poreach Vole Acharav. He also flew after him. Ad shemats oh omed umishtatech v'teki k'tnei hakavod. So Pinchas saw Bilam standing before the k'tnei hakavod, hiding. V'yad natan ala Pinchas tzitz shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, took the tzitz with the name of God. Utfaso, he grabbed him. V'ho vidova, real his name Moshe. He brought him in front of Moshe in the Sanhedrin, and they judged him for mitah, and they killed him that way. The Sanhedrin got Bilam ben Baor. Very interesting midrashim about Pinchas flying around with his arms of Evan, chasing after Bilam flying around with his arms of Evan.
Why did he just kill him? Why did he have to go to...
According to other midrashim, he did kill him. It depends on who killed him. Did they do it in Beit Din? Did Pinchas kill him in the war? I just thought you'd find it interesting to know all these wacky midrashim, a lot of wacky midrashim about how they killed, how Pinchas caught Bilam ben Baor. What that shows you is Pinchas himself was in the battle. Pinchas himself was the Ish Shalom, apparently. He's supposed to be this man of peace. Right? He himself was a man of war as well.
High up in the army.
Very high up in the army. Quite high up. In fact, he started. In the Air Force. There's no distinction. There's no division. Right? This idea of that you have these people who are too holy, too spiritual to go out and fight. Right? Yehoshua bin Nun was Misharet Moshe Rabbeinu. And what did he do? He leads the war, the people out to fight. David HaMelech, the most spiritual, the most religious, the most poetic, the most sensitive. What do we know about David HaMelech's upbringing, his whole development?
Shepherd.
We started as a shepherd. And then he begins by killing Goliath. He was a general in Shaul's army. It says, Shaul killed by the thousands. And David, Birvavot, in the tens of thousands. There is no such thing, this idea that our military leaders, Netanyahu is a military leader, he's a man of valor, right? You know, Netanyahu is the head, and next to him is Ehud Barak, he's also a general. Right? The idea that we have this division, that these are our military leaders, our great people, our military leaders, but they're not religious people, is not exact. The Jewish people will reach its completion when our prime minister is our religious leader, is our military leader, but he was the standout in Shivat Hesder. He's also, you know what I'm saying, when the person who becomes a prime minister is the Rav Sabato. Is the person who's the Rosh Yeshiva, who's writing the poetry, who's also the military, and he's also the political leader. Those are one and the same. They're supposed to be the same thing. They're not supposed to be divided. They're not supposed to be separate. And the Jewish people will reach its completion when everyone realizes that. And our most spiritual person, our most learned guy, the biggest tzaddik, is the one who goes out to war, and he's the one who leads us, and is the one who leads the nation as well. And it... What?
Yeah, like
it will happen. It will happen. It will happen. Doesn't necessarily have to be a Hester guy. It could be someone from the Haredi for all we know. Maybe it will be. And that will be the person that unites all the Jewish people together and brings Mashiach, and might very well be in the Mashiach. So.